239-1310, San Luis Lemus. We are live from the food court out at Lafayette Square. One of the things we probably spend on this program at least a quarter, 25% of the time, maybe 30% of the time, dealing with issues of public education and trying to have all different points of view heard on the program. And there's a relatively new organization that's out there talking about public education. They call themselves Hoosiers for Quality Education. Tasha Salyers is with that organization. She joins me live. And you, first of all, you just followed one of the examples of one of the charter schools in this city that kind of started out in the middle of the pack and has improved in the quality of finally reaching an A, and that is one of the quality education success stories that's occurring here in this county.
Yes, that's great. It's great to see those types of schools and great to see what they're doing for kids. And the conversations are encouraging, right? I mean, years ago, we weren't having these conversations because we didn't have the data and we didn't have the information that we have today. So it's encouraging that we're able to talk about the schools that are doing these great things for kids.
What is Hoosiers for Quality Education? How did it get formed? What in the larger debates about education in this community and in this state, where do you guys fit in?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Hoosiers for Quality Education is a nonprofit C4, and we're affiliated with another nonprofit that's a C3 organization called Institute for Quality Education. So together, these two nonprofits are taking a comprehensive approach to improving education in Indiana. We're only focused on our state. We do not advocate for one type of school over another. So we think that all schools need to do a good job educating kids, and we're trying to make that happen.
Are you all concentrating on K-12 or the whole thing from preschool through college?
We're focused on K-12 education.
Given that we were talking to a member of the City County Council about the whole pre-K proposal, and she's got some qualms about it, not the fact that we shouldn't have quality pre-K in this state and in this county, but the fact that we have not yet mandated kindergarten in the whole K-12, K is the only thing that is unmandated. Are we at a point, if we're going to start making investments in not only private sector money, but taxpayers' money in improving the quality of pre-K? The governor's test is going to be starting next month. There's what Marion County is going to be doing. Do we need to start putting back on the table mandatory kindergarten and figure out how all the taxpayers of Indiana pay for that?
Yeah, so you bring up a really good question, Amos. I think that, yes. I mean, the simple answer is yes. Kindergarten is very important. And when we see the discussion now expanding to pre-K, you're right. That's kind of a missing piece there. It gets interesting because when we look across the state, for the most part, most kids have access to a full-day kindergarten program at this time. You'll find different opinions about whether or not that's a good thing. You know, in some of our suburban districts here in Indianapolis, you have parents that say, I don't want mandated pre-K. I'd like to have the flexibility to make that decision on my own. But then, you know, we have other pockets of the community where we know that a good quality pre-K program is going to get those kiddos off to a good start for the rest of their K-12 education. So you bring up a good point. Yes, we definitely think that kindergarten, a strong kindergarten program, is a step in the right direction, and we're encouraged by all of this discussion about pre-K as well.
The legislative session starts next week with Organization Day, and that's not anymore a ceremonial day. That's usually where people start laying out their positions for the first of the year when the session really starts. From Hoosiers for a Quality Education's point of view, are there pieces of legislation or things that you would like to see the legislature do in the next session? Obviously, there's going to be a major fight as to what should the school funding formula be, which I think is now more complicated than calculus. From your organization's point of view, what should the legislature be dealing with in education, if anything, this session?
Yeah, so our organization really focuses on four policy buckets, one of them being more equitable funding. So across the board, you're right, the funding formula is a mess, and no one really understands it. So let's dig into that. Let's make sure that it's fair. It's really interesting that across the state, the same child can go to, you know, many different schools, but receive different funding depending on where they check in the morning. So that's one issue that we're looking at. Teacher evaluation is another policy bucket that we look at. School accountability, so the A through F, and measures such as that. And then, school choice is the fourth one. So,
In terms of school choice, we've got the vouchers, the largest. I think we're now the largest state with the number of kids in vouchers than any state in the country. Some districts allow cross-district transfers. Do we have enough choice? Do we need to let the choices we have kind of settle and marinate before somebody gets an idea to add or subtract?
Yes, I would agree with you there. I think that you're absolutely right. We have a lot of choice. I'm glad that you mentioned inter-district transfer. I think that there's sort of a misconception that school choice equals vouchers or school choice equals charters. There are all kinds of school choices. Choosing a public school, like I do for my daughter, that's a choice. I would say the choices are there, so we're not really looking at expanding them in any way. Now what we need to do is really make sure that all of those choices are good quality.
You mentioned choice. There's also what is called the default choice. If a parent decides to leave a child in the school that they're in, that is a choice. And sometimes, because there are the students obviously in low or poor performing schools, and it may be the kid in that school is getting A's, it may be the kid in that school is not successful. What do we need to do in terms of encouraging districts to raise the bar of their poor performing schools, whether it's an IPS school, whether it's a charter? Because I think everybody's concerned about the growth of charters that are low-performing schools, whether they're mayor's charter schools, the Ball State charter schools, or a basket case. And is that, and specifically on Ball State, is that something where your organization, because it seems like Ball State seems to be immune from criticism. People that are in the reform movement have been very vocal about problems in public school districts. Obviously, the mayor's office has some strong accountability measures. But is it time for Ball State? Obviously, they have new leadership at the top of that university. Is it time for them to be put on the carpet saying, you got a basket case, embarrassing mess of low-performing charter? Or do you disagree with that?
No, I agree with you. And I think, Amos, I don't think you'll find anyone in the reform movement that would stand up for poor-performing charters. We want to see all schools provide good quality options. And really, it matters less to us what the sign on the outside of the building says. And as I said before, we're not going to advocate for one type of school over another. And I don't think you'll find anyone in the movement who will. I think that there are a lot of really important conversations taking place around authorizer accountability. And you mentioned Ball State. So that's the direction we're going in. And I think that when we can have those conversations and really start leaning on authorizers to be accountable for their school's performance, then we're heading in the right direction.
239-1310, 239-1310, South News and Amos. We're with Tasha Sawyer with Hoosiers for Quality Education. One of the things that came up with the Flanner House tragedy is when a decision is made to close a school mid-school year or early in the school year, does there need to be a rethink of how that happens? Because it's not like when a tornado goes through, and we've had instances of tornadoes going through a school. If you're a school in a district, that district can find alternatives. A religious-based school can find alternatives. Charters are a little bit. Really need to look at, unless it's some egregious sin, that closing a school midstream, it should be a last resort.
I think so. And I think for everyone involved, that was heartbreaking, right? We were there. The mayor's office did a great job of hosting a parent enrollment fair for those parents at Flanner House. And they did an excellent job of finding new places for those kiddos to go to school. But you bring up a really good point. I mean, that's very disruptive for those children. It's disruptive for the families. And part of that, Amos, is a problem with our timeline for accountability. I mean, we didn't get you know, so ISTEP scores don't come back until the school year is already beginning. You know, there are a lot of, I think, dominoes that fell in the timing of that, what happened at Flanner House, which was really unfortunate.
Do we need to look at the timing of dominoes? If a kid goes and takes an ACT or an SAT test, they're not waiting 3 months to get the results. They have them in, what, 4 to 6 weeks? So if SAT can do that nationally, why can't whoever our test vendor is figure this thing out and provide results earlier and speed up the process? Because originally, when ISTEP started, the whole idea was the scores would come back prior to the end of a school year so that remediation plans could be made for those students.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And so we have a exciting opportunity right now in Indiana, right, because we're getting ready to select a new testing vendor. I sat in on the strategic planning committee yesterday at the State Board of Education, and that came up, Amos, that very point of, hey, whoever we choose moving forward, let's have these discussions about timeline, because the data means so much more if we can get it back at the end of the year, you know, and then schools can plan all summer, think about where they're going to put their students before fall starts.
Is it also letting parents, because everybody talks about parental involvement and getting parents to understand their importance in the process, and one of the things we do on this program is try to tell the community everybody has a boss. The only person that doesn't have a boss is God Almighty. Everybody else has a boss, and there's a chain of command in any kind of school. From your organization's point of view, how important is it that we really need to do a better job as a state educating parents and increasingly grandparents of what the process is, what the rules are, making sure that as more and more schools get electronic, that grades are electronic, that grades are available now literally on a daily basis, that parents really understand that and that you can really see how your kids are doing in school literally in real time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that it's a two-part process, right? We believe that it starts with the school. So the school needs to be willing to hold themselves accountable. I was an educator, and I would tell my fellow teachers, look, we have to be able to sit across from a parent or a grandparent and say, here are the things we're doing to hold ourselves accountable for your child that you're entrusting to us. Then the second part of that is, here are the things then, parents and grandparents, that we need you to do to meet us at the table to ensure that your child is successful. And you mentioned, you know, the grades. School grading is a good example of that. You know, many parents aren't aware of the A through F school grading system. That needs to change. They need to know when they're dropping their child off at school that day, is it a D school? Is it an F school? And then more importantly, why? What's going on there that's causing that?
In the evaluations they're making of A through F, one of the concerns that I had was understood growth, but didn't like that if your school didn't grow in achievement high enough, you got negative points. I understand getting negative points if your growth goes down, but if your growth isn't strong enough, getting negative points, I thought, was the dumbest idea that I'd ever heard of. Are you confident we may have a grading system that people could understand? A, and at some point in a grading system, an accountability system, should parents' feedback be a part of that? New York City, I believe, in their accountability system, has a place for parent feedback to be merged into those evaluations. Now, granted, that's New York, where everybody has, there's a tradition of accepting strong opinions in New York. Is that something that parent feedback needs to be in there at some point?
That's a great point. So I know you know that the State Board of Education is looking at a new A through F formula. Let me say first, I don't think that we will ever find a formula that everyone's going to join hands and say, kumbaya, we've found, you know, the perfect solution. With that being said, though, again, you know, we're having conversations about school performance that never took place. We're having conversations about student growth. You know, 10 years ago, no one was talking about that. So that's really important. The idea of including parent feedback, I think, is a great one. We are statewide partners with greatschools.org, and part of what they do to evaluate schools on their website is to include parent feedback. I think that more and more we're going to see that happening.
Final question on teacher evaluation. We basically have a teacher shortage in this country. We definitely have a shortage of minority teachers. if evaluations are tightened up, that would cause more, because I think it's not passing the common sense test, because everybody's saying, wait a minute, how can 99% of all teachers be doing a wonderful job? If you go to tighter evaluations, more realistic evaluations, which could increase the number of teachers that lose jobs, and we don't have enough teachers in the pipeline, are we solving one problem and causing a bigger problem?
So, I mean, I think that's a valid concern. I think, though, the thing to remember, and what I would say, is that teacher evaluations are not designed to be punitive, you know, or designed to fire teachers necessarily. If a teacher is just really doing an atrocious job, then eventually, yes, that teacher needs to be removed. However, the way that our law is designed in Indiana, it's really designed to meet the teacher where they are and then give them the skills that they need to improve. Every teacher wants to do a good job, right? I mean, that's why they're there. And so the way our law is written is really to give them the professional development and the feedback that they need so they can get better. The worst case scenario is that they would need to be removed from their
The organization is Hoosiers for Quality Education. Tasha Salyers, if people want more information about your organization, how do they find out about y'all?
Sure. They can find us on the web, h4qed.org. We're also on Twitter, at h4qed.
Tasha Salyers with Hoosiers for Quality Education. Thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Thank you, Amos.
All right. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, find out what is on your mind on this third Friday of November. It's Afternoons with Amos. It is also the Moselle Radiothon. The Moselle Radiothon number is 328-0551, 328-0551, 328-0551. Our number to find out what's on your mind is 239-1310. More after these.
Indy, with Thanksgiving quickly approaching, it's that time of year to not only give thanks for what we have, but help others in need. Join AM 1310 The Light as we team up with the Moselle Sanders Foundation Thanksgiving Dinner Program. It's our way to give families a hand up and continue our fight against hunger, all by providing a healthy meal and bringing families hope during this holiday season. What began with just a handful of volunteers who served 20 meals to the hungry in Circle City has grown into one of Indiana's leaders and feeds 35,000 in Indy on Thanksgiving Day. Would you like to be a part of it this year? Visit PraiseIndy.com or MoselleSanders.org to make your donation online or sign up to volunteer. We need volunteers.